button. Oh, he hit the button.
Yeah, I tuned it down a little bit when I was streaming.
Piss streaming.
So yeah, I started streaming the other day, and I had like 4 viewers right off the bat.
Oh my
and
gosh.
One of them
You're
was
so popular.
Jeff Lorenz, and he drops in the chat, and he's like, "What the fuck is this? My guy is streaming before 9 p.m.
It's true.
And then I said, I've been on butt sniffing, mouth breathing day shift for like a month, so my life is like scheduled for that schedule, and then like 4 people left the video. I was left to myself.
Oh boy. Welcome back to Diamond Gaming Bros. I am dropping my shit, apparently. My ginormous water bottle.
Imagine, you only need to drink 3 of those a day. The standards for drinking water in a day are just ridiculous. How do people do it?
You drink water.
I don't understand.
Dog, you don't even eat, so your opinion's just invalid in general.
I mean, drinking that much coffee is normal, but that much water without the beans? Unacceptable.
I don't know about that. I think you have problems. I am one of the special people.
Mm.
You are one of the other special people.
Yep, you're Spencer. I'm Jacob. So, I was on a trip for like a whole month, and it was like 60 degrees and sunny the whole time. I get home, and the Mother Nature goes, "Fuck you, it's gonna snow and ice and be like 20 degrees the whole weekend."
Yes.
I love it here. I'm so glad to be home.
Welcome back, bitch. This is what you get for, you know, leaving this wonderful state. So speaking of leaving the state.
Oh.
So you know how Alan Wake
left his mental state?
That too. In the first game, you were in fucking Washington.
Yes.
In Alan Wake, American Nightmare, you're in Colorado.
Whoa.
Sort of. It's confusing because you're still out. Wait. Is it Colorado or Arizona? Am I just stupid? I might be stupid.
Same thing, really.
It really is. Just desert. Come on, give me the thingamabugger.
Yeah, Mickey, if you could edit all this out, please, that'd be great.
Why are you using my sex name on air? Oh, boy. Arizona, okay. Yeah, same thing, basically. So, Alan Wake's... it's not Alan Wake American Nightmare. It's Alan Wake's American Nightmare. Ooh, title difference.
Because Washington isn't part of America.
Dude, if I was gonna... Like, no joke, if I was gonna live anywhere that wasn't New England, Washington is kind of the top of the list. They have similar enough climate, and they have a lot of mountains, and they're also way above sea level.
And the highest suicide rate in the country.
Okay, well, you know, we're 2 towns away from the heroin capital of the world, so we can't say shit.
At least we have fun on this coast.
Washington's fun. They have the big trees. The big trees.
Yeah, but like half the state jumps off the Space Needle or whatever.
The Space Needle. What? I don't understand what you're saying.
I like your funny words, Magic Man.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, Arizona.
Yeah, Alan Wake's American Nightmare is a standalone sequel game, but like not really a full game package that is standalone, aka you buy it separately from the first game.
Was it built downloadable?
Yes.
And it's
only
content?
It is, but it's not downloadable content for the first game. If anything, I believe it's only available digitally. I'm pretty confident. I think it launched on the Xbox Live Arcade back when that was a thing. So it's standalone DLC, but it's also kind of a game on its own. It's a whole thing. So if the 2 DLC packets for Alan Wake were an epilogue. This is another epilogue.
Epilogue part 3.
Basically. It has a somewhat drastic gameplay shift that I was kind of surprised by how well it transitioned into more action-focused than horror, but it still didn't lose the horror aspects. It's still moderately spoopy. Sometimes the jump scares do be like that. But basically, we pick up with Alan, who is in Arizona, in big quotes, fighting against Mr. Scratch. He's really in the dark place because he never left the dark place. He is This is where it gets really fucking confusing, and Alan Wake 2 so far is infinitely more confusing. I love it. So in the end of Alan Wake the game, the Dark Presence sends Mr. Scratch, an evil doppelganger of Alan, to the surface world, the real world, to go be a dickhead and cause shenanigans.
I need my sunlight. I don't get enough.
Vitamin D. But also because he's kind of in cahoots with the Dark Presence / the Dark Place. It's very confusing. He has power over it, so he can, like, willingly go back to the Dark Place, or at least exerts a level of control and is, like, able to project an image into it. Like Darkseid, basically. Whereas Darkseid actually exists 50,000 billion dimensions above everybody else, but he can still, like, show up and you can punch him in the head. It's kind of like that, actually. So he's the primary antagonist of this game, in quotes. Where you, Alan, go through a time loop three separate times in fake Arizona, which is just like, especially now with the context of two, especially, the biggest through line of this, other than Alan being, you know, a shitty person, is like, what if we just said Night Springs or Bright Falls and then made it a different location every time? Because it's just always changing. It's this place that definitely actually exists, but it's constantly being rewritten by plot. Literally, like, the plot rewrites reality and stuff. So, whatever. He is trying to fight Mr. Scratch. Mr. Scratch basically went on, like, a rampage through this place for reasons. He, you know, terrorized some locals, does a lot of murder, you know, beats up some people, kind of sexually assaults some people. That one's a little weird. But it basically, it seems like his goal, Mr. Scratch, by the end of this DLC, is to have basically take Alan's tools away from him. In this reality of sorts, Alan needs information and story to be able to write new stories. So, like, he basically time loop, duh. But every time you do the time loop, you gain further information and you get transmissions from outside of the Dark Place. It's very weird and confusing on a logistical level how that works. So then you can progress further and faster. And Mr. Scratch is like, I know this thing is coming. I'm going to take it away from you because you suck and I don't like you. I'm going to fuck your wife. That's basically his monologues that you encounter throughout the game. He shows up a little bit gameplay-wise towards the end, mostly as, like, a guy just kind of standing there taunting you while you fight Taken. But in... maybe there's 10 of them in total. There's a bunch of, like, random TVs scattered throughout the world you can just turn on. And this is the cool part. They are live-action recorded cutscenes. So the idea of what, you know, when you go back to Quantum Break and that whole mess of a thing that was kind of cool but kind of not good, and the weird TV show video game smushing, This is where that idea came from. And next month, I look forward to... wait, next month? Yes, next month. I look forward to discussing how that affects the future, because it's cool. Remedy's gotten smarter. So they're like experimental live-action recorded segments, but, like, on green screens with 3D rendered backgrounds and stuff. So it can be a little wonky looking, but I actually feel like they do a really good job of, one, acting. I do not remember his name, but the guy who plays Alan physically and then does the vocal role is really, really good. He's only gotten better over time. And then him basically playing against himself as an evil suicide killer, yes, serial killer version of himself, basically, is really cool. He just pulls a lot of legwork. The cutscenes are pretty well composed. They're shot like movies, you know, not just I don't know, done dramatically. Like, they're actually composed pretty consistently well. The costuming is handled really well. It kind of feels like Sin City the movie a little bit, where it has, like, a dissonance between the characters and the environment, but I actually think it works to its advantage because the Dark Place is such a weird amalgam of non-existent, non-corporeal weird shit that doesn't make any fucking sense no matter how hard you look at it. Except to Sam Lake. Apparently, you know, the games writer just knows everything because he's such a big, smart boy. So yeah, you go through three major locations through the game in Arizona. You are in, like, a little downtown strip of, like, a place in bumfuck nowhere, Bright Falls, but it's not the Bright Falls from the last game, it's a different Bright Falls, blah, blah, blah. Basically, think Cars the movie. You're in Arizona on Route 66, and you're just in this little town that has nothing there. So you encounter a couple characters there. There's like a diner and a hotel and a garage and oil fields and stuff. Yeah, oil! They need democracy. Then you go to an observatory where you encounter a scientist character who's all, you gotta help me fix the shit so we can get this weird transmission that makes no sense. And then the third location is a drive-in movie theater that's abandoned, which is really cool. I was really impressed with how much this felt like the first game, in a sense, but with a very different tone and some technical details change. But, like, the amount of...
I'm watching it. It looks so good.
It's insane, dude! Like, what the fuck? Also, his performance is amazing. Like, the...
freckles and everything.
Yeah, like, the...
looks so good.
The vocal performance he's giving is fucking nuts. Everyone's like, can we just give this guy, like, any role now?
Like, there's also, like, a pinkness in it, edges of his nose.
Yeah, it's so cool. So as you progress through the three main areas, you then loop through twice because reasons. So you remember where X, Y, and Z things are. You go through it faster, blah, 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 blah. I was really impressed with how much the world, while it was definitely like a fully new sandbox, it had the same feeling of Alan Wake, where it's like, this is kind of just an open world, like, but with like some arbitrary lines drawn around the edges and that's it. This one doesn't have Alan Wake's, like, structural barriers where it's like, okay, you can't climb up this rock face because that's the end of the map, you know? It doesn't have that. It does have a few of those, I guess, but most of them are just, if you keep walking, say, down a road that goes nowhere, the game will billow in some wind and be all spooky, and then it just makes you stop and turn around. So it has, like, soft barriers, I guess. But it's surprisingly open. All three major locations are pretty well detailed, and around comparable, I would say, to most of the segments in Alan Wake, where you have like a lot of interior and exterior locations on the same map. Like, it's just very, it feels open, which is really impressive for a game that came out in like, it's like 2 years after the first game, so like 2013, 2012. So it's pretty impressive on that level. But on a technical level, it's really cool. It has some moderate graphical improvements, not anything drastic. I think the lighting got a pretty decent improvement, but the texturing's just a little better. Most of the assets feel kind of like an asset flip, even when they are assets that they definitely did not create for Alan Wake. The way that they are constructed, like, artistically, definitely feel... it feels like the same material of the first game just got pulled into this weird DLC thing. And I think that that's a good thing. I think it helps with the transition period. It also helps it feel like a conclusion. It doesn't feel like some, I don't know, some random poop from a butt they just kind of thought of afterwards just to throw out there. It does feel like even you could construct everything whole cloth, you don't really need to. And I don't think that the game justifies that sort of a need. So a lot of it does feel kind of recycled, but in a good way, I think. The gunplay is wildly expanded. In terms of, like, damage and, like, number balancing, it's pretty similar. There are a few different subclasses of weapons now. There's, like, handguns and long guns, and then there's different variants of each one. So you have, like, hunting rifle, carbine rifle, shotgun, combat shotgun, whatever. And then you have, like, revolver, semi-automatic pistol, nail gun, the one that's on the cover of the game, which is actually like the worst weapon in the game, but it's so much fun. So
I thought there was a chainsaw on the cover.
That's a nail gun. And you can like flip between those ones. They are unlocked through the main game as suitcases that you get after getting a certain amount of manuscripts. And because you return to these areas as the game progresses, you should remember those key locations from before when you get enough manuscripts to unlock, you know, the next weapon. They're all really cool, to be honest. I was really impressed with how it still feels like Alan Wake in terms of it being pretty simple and straightforward gunplay. It's not like the most exciting thing, but it's really, really consistent and it doesn't feel repetitive, which is just kind of odd. I don't understand how something can be, frankly, so shallow, but still be really engaging. They all have really good animations and sound design, which definitely helps. The camera angle for gameplay wise has been shifted a little bit. It's a little bit closer into Alan. So instead of it being like a third person action adventure game, it's a little like 30% closer to his backside.
So now you can see his cheeks rubbing together as he runs?
True. You can still fully rotate around him, but it definitely makes it feel more like an over-the-top shooter. Which is weird because, like I said, the number balance is almost the same. It's definitely been modified to make it more aggressive and faster and more or less scary, you know? But, like, it feels almost the same. Like, the transition is just dumb. Like, holy shit. I was floored, to be honest. Sprinting also is improved. He moves faster now because, of course, you know, now that he's been running around in the dark place for 2 years, he's no longer an asthmatic alcoholic writer who doesn't leave his house. He can run a little faster.
Love that. Character progression.
Seriously.
Inhaler is on the skill tree.
Basically. all of the other characters that you encounter in the game, well, there aren't many of them. There's four, I believe. They're all fine. In a similar level to the first Alan Wake, where outside of you had your, like, Sheriff Breaker was a main character. Like, Lamp Lady, whose name I forgot, was a main character.
Lumiere?
No.
Oh.
But, like, pretty much everybody else was kind of... They weren't flat, but they were definitely very archetypal outside of the main cast of characters. And I think that they're similar enough here. And for the amount of screen time they have, meaning like 20 minutes each max, they leave a decent enough impression. You have your probably lesbian mechanic who works out in the middle of bumfuck nowhere and runs a hotel. She's like, they don't like give me their cars because they're all, I don't know what accent I'm doing. Like, because they think I can't fucking fix the car. And it's like, that's New York.
I think you're doing the Bostonian.
That was more like
Boston
New York.
Lesbian.
Wait, let me...
You're so good at the Boston lesbian.
Well, I gotta remember how to do it!
Do it again. Summon the movie that you watched that triggered the Boston lesbian voice.
Fuck. That was a horny movie.
It was great that one night, too, because one, you were hammered. Two, you were smoking a pack outside on my porch. And just a switch in your brain clicked.
I couldn't stop.
And you couldn't stop. Colin wanted to move on. And asked you a serious question, and you answered in the Boston lesbian accent. He was like, shut the fuck up and answer my question! And it was the funniest thing.
That was genuinely one of our best moments. Like, that's an all-time great. I snapped. I just, you know, I'm living out my lifelong dream of being a Boston lesbian. But yeah, so, like, you have archetypes. She's also, like, a hippie and believes in crystals and shit and whatever, and she's like,
I mean, crystals do exist.
Well, they do, apparently.
Yes. They don't do anything. They look pretty sometimes.
I think you could jab them into your eyes.
Ooh.
Yeah. You have.
I do, as the crystal says.
True. There's a scientist at the observatory who's definitely on the flatter side, but she's like doing the whole, how do you think that this is not real and what about free will and shit? You know, that you do the whole back and forth. And Alan's like, dude, I don't fucking know. I just want to write books and fuck my wife. and then... There's a lady at the drive-in theater who's, like, the curator, basically. It's, like, a film festival coming up. And, of course, Alan's wife has a film that's going to be at that festival for reasons. Because, of course, you know, plot and stuff. So they're all fine. They're not the most engaging. But I was definitely impressed for, like, the total screen time that each of these characters have. Each run-through, you might see them for 5 minutes apiece. I remember them pretty well. I don't remember their names.
Bruh, it's going to rain all week long. Every single day this week, it's raining.
Well, at least we know the snow will be gone by the time it's done.
I'm leaving this state.
Fuck you. You're not. I'm going to go to Japan for 3 years. No, you're not. I will Iwo Jima that plane. I don't care. I will Christopher Nolan that plane right into the art gallery. I don't care. subtlety be damned. Fuck. The music is really well handled as well. It's a little bit more upbeat than the first game. It still has its level of moderate spoopiness. It just works. It's not super memorable, but because the framing device of this game is more of an action-adventure shooter with, you know, you gotta get the pew-pew, and Alan's like, I gotta find my wife. It's a little bit more archetypal. So by the end of it, it's a little hammy intentionally, especially in the music department. Mr. Scratch, like I said, is on a bunch of TVs throughout the whole game. He just randomly is like, Alan, I don't want to kill this guy, but like, I'm going to fucking do it. Now watch me. And he just does a bunch of murders. All of those are also live action segments, which I think are really well done. It's mostly just in like one hotel room. He's just like, I just lured a bunch of random people here and I'm going to like cut their throats open because I am better than you, Alan, because he's his dark bits and shit, you know. Really good performance. Very engaging. I found every TV and I would just like sit there and stare at it in game until it was done instead of being like, oh, cool, it's a cutscene, whatever. Like, I actually engage with them. It also makes Mr. Scratch more present throughout the game because he doesn't really show up in person until like the last hour or two, maybe. So that really helps with that. There are 50 manuscripts or so in this game, which is impressive because the original game has 110-ish. And somehow it doesn't feel repetitive and obnoxious. One, because they're written arguably better, like quality-wise. The voiceover is equally as good. They serve basically the same function in this game of like somewhat in the future, somewhat in the past. You can kind of glean more information from them, you know, it's plot stuff. But then they serve the secondary element of being able to get said new weapons, which I think is a really good way to integrate them into the game. And because when you break it down, the density of the amount of manuscripts like per section of the three sections of the game is a lot more than you'd think because you have three run-throughs of each one and they all have different manuscripts, so you can only get them during each run-through, and I got all of them on my first try, which was pretty cool. I just think that that's really cool, and some of them you can tell like during in the manuscript section, you can look through the list and it'll give you part of its title, will let you know it's not on this run-through, so just chill out and don't look for it too bad, which is pretty cool. Yeah, I was actually kind of impressed with their integration. Again, of 50, it's like 53. It's like, I didn't feel like I was like collectible hunting, but that's half as many as in the first game, which is like 10 times bigger. I don't get it. The story's just good. It does end on a sort of conclusion, not really. It gets retconned by there being more follow-ups, but also not really. It gives you sort of a fake ending that's like, you can interpret this as an ending if you want. I think Remedy didn't know if they were going to be able to go back to the characters, so they wanted to give them a proper conclusion other than just, it's not a lake, it's an ocean, oh my god, and just kind of leaving it at that and being like, well, that's a depressing ending. even by the end of the two DLCs, it's still pretty like, oh, well, he's fucked. And, I mean, if you've seen Alan Wake 2, you know, it's been 13 years. He's still Fox. So I just feel like they kind of had a couple of cool ideas in their head. They're like, another DLC would have been weird. So they just made this little standalone nugget. Secondary mode, I guess, is, I don't remember what they call it, but it's basically an arcade mode. There are 10 or so maps. They're just different locations. Some of them are from the game directly. Some of them are, like, heavily modified map areas. You know, it's like, oh, big graveyard, whatever, that are... It's just horde mode, basically. They're 10-minute long matches. Survive! Whoa! And the easy solution is just don't kill any of the Taken because they don't spawn in until you start killing them. So, like, it'll spawn one, and then it'll spawn two. And I think it changes level to level, but the first level literally only spawns two, and if you never kill them, you can go through the 10 minutes. There's an achievement for this of only just flashing them and then running away. So it's 10 minutes of running in circles. So there are easy ways to cheese it, but that also includes all of the weapons from the story/campaign. Saying campaign feels weird. You unlock them with the same amount of manuscripts. So if you haven't finished the story yet, you're probably not going to be able to get all the weapons, but they're just kind of randomly placed on maps. You can unlock them and use them, and there's ammo scattered around, and, you know, it's a horde mode. I was really impressed with it, though. Like, it functions pretty smoothly. The maps are pretty well thought out. There's a ranking system for score and, like, combos and modifiers and stuff. Basically, if you don't get hit, your combo's going up. If you get hit, you get fucked. I wouldn't play it forever, but I had a pretty good time. I think I completed about half of the maps for, you know, not dog shit ratings, so maybe an hour or two. Just decent. It's a decent way to pad out the runtime, and also it makes sense because this is what being in the dark place is like. It's just a time loop, your memory gets wiped, you do another time loop, your memory gets wiped, and that's why Alan Wake is still a scared little bitch, because he doesn't remember anything. And that makes the hard mode make more sense than just having it be there. There's actually a decent justification for it. Pretty cool. So I played, I think, about 1 or 2 hours of arcade or whatever the fuck. The campaign, I actually took a lot longer than I thought I was going to. I didn't try to get 100% until about halfway through, and I realized, oh, I could probably just do this easy because I was kind of already doing it. The typical completion time is like 2 hours, 3 hours. I took like 8. Jeez. And it didn't feel that long. It was, I don't know, man. It was definitely short. Like, it was, I would not pay $60 for this.
Editor's note, he did 8 hours in one night. In one sitting.
Yeah, I did. Shut up. Shush. Again. It's like the third time. I fucking hate myself. Sorry, I just get interested about things, and I get endorphins for once. Good thing, I guess, with Alan Wake 2 is the game's too big for me to do that.
Right.
Too complicated.
We call it an autistic hyperfocus.
Brainworms.
Yeah, whatever.
But yeah, so like total, I think maybe more like 7 hours. But for 100% completion of the story with a decent amount of deaths and a lot of fucking around, just trying to see what the limits of the map were and, you know, what's around, but not scouring up until the second half to make sure I got all the manuscripts. And then magically I just got all of them because I'm just so fucking good at it.
Professional gamer.
Dude, it was $10. And to be honest, that's a total of like 10 hours. And I'm going to go back. There's more achievements to get for completing all of the challenge, arcade, survival, whatever the fuck maps for different ratings and stuff. And that's cool. I am annoyed because the achievement list is very small. Like with a lot of Xbox Arcade type, like Xbox Live Arcade titles from the 360 generation, they only have like 200 G points in total, or maybe 400. They're very small. They're the equivalent of a DLC pack. And this one is just small. There's like 4 achievements for completing the game. And the bigger complaint I have with the campaign is there's no difficulty options. It's easy. It's fun as shit, and you will die. Like, you will just fuck shit up. But, like, there aren't difficulty options. I'm sure that would have been a pain in the ass, but there just aren't. I'm not sure why. The arcade mode references, like, nightmare difficulty because there are some maps that are, like, labeled as, like, nightmare mode. So it's not like they forgot that there's another difficulty, but there's just, it only plays the one way, which is kind of lame.
I kind of like that.
I like it.
I'd rather the balanced experience of, like, no, everybody plays it this way.
Usually, yeah, I don't know. It's
especially with it being a short thing, like a bigger game, yeah, have difficulty modes, but this is a very specifically crafted story, so
I think I might just more be annoyed it was so easy. Like, not because it was like painfully stupid or anything. It was just like I died, but mostly because I'm stupid.
Yeah.
I completely forgot to mention there's some new enemy types. They're fine. There's nothing really exciting there. There's just some kooky. There's a bird man. All the bird, the, you know, the crows, they just turn into a guy who looks like a bird, and then he fucking jumps at you. There's some weird enemies. They're fine. They're not that exciting. I don't think they're in Alan Wake 2, so that probably tells you about that, but it was nice to spice it up. I paid like 3 cents for this. I think it launched at for like $10 or $20 originally, and it's been, I think, at $10 permanently on Xbox Live for a long time now, like 10 years. And then it was on sale for like $2.50 or something. So for $2.50, I got like 10 hours worth of game out of it. That's a quarter an hour. That's a fucking steal.
That's great.
I never get deals like that. So A+. It's not as deep as the first game, but it's also more of a consistent experience. Playing it without the context of the first game is probably a dumb idea. You're stupid.
Why?
Because you said that you played that one first.
I haven't played American Nightmare at all.
What?
No.
What?
I've never touched it.
You should touch it. Except you can't get it on PlayStation. Hey. Get fucked.
It's on PC.
Yeah. Banger. Not as, you know, deep of an emotional experience, but, you know, pretty heckin' good.
You know what else is pretty heckin' good? That trailer for a new video game.
Yes.
It's there's only news we have.
There was other news, but I really just, there was not enough to put together into anything noticeable. You know, that'd be worth the time. But yeah, no, we can just meme and cream about one thing. The Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra trailer, which is the Black Panther and Captain America game, looks fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Big nut.
Yeah.
I think the only real information we have gameplay-wise is some type of third-person action adventure, which could mean anything. I'm gonna guess like Shadow of Mordor type, maybe.
Yeah.
It seems like a decent midway point between like difficult and mainstream enough, but also just not like wicked shallow.
The Black Panther gameplay looked kind of Assassin's Creed-y.
A little bit, which, to be fair, Shadow of Mordor is pretty Assassin's Creed-y.
Yeah. I'm interested to know how the Captain America side of things will play out. Like, what his gameplay style will be.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the, like... Because obviously the story is them encountering each other, and then there's, they mention in the trailer, there's a third superhuman somebody, which I'm assuming would be Red Skull, probably. Mm-hmm. But, like, so does that mean that it's going to be Act 1 is Captain America, Act 2 is Black Panther, and then Act 3 is both, or, like, neither? Or, like what's the gameplay look like? Like,
the third one is Magneto.
Oh, my gosh. Honestly, that'd be great.
That'd be wicked cool.
That'd be good. They'd never do it. No balls.
Nope.
No balls. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of curious about that, because I don't think they announced it as a co-op game. I might be wrong. I just don't remember it. So... Mm.
I don't know much about this game at all.
Yeah, it was basically just, it was announced like 6 months ago, and we covered it. It's like, it's coming from this company, and it's got these two characters and the Howling Commandos, and that was about it.
I'm surprised that they're saying it's coming out next year.
Yeah.
That seems pretty sudden.
Probably late next year, but still.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, usually these, the majority of these announcements of a similar nature are like 2027, you know, just way the fuck out there. They're right. Just trying to generate hype so they can get the money to make the game, which is lame. I'm guessing that they put this into development like the second that they put the like announcement out, and they're like, nope, we're definitely doing it, and they just started rolling. Because the trailer doesn't include any gameplay. It looks like it's all pre-rendered. They look like they're pre-rendered cutscenes from the game, or at least most of them are. They're probably like 50-50. But like, what the fuck does their development pipeline look like? That'd be weird. I'm just curious, because usually...
The tech demo was interesting, because it looked like it was taking, you know, the game engine and looking around and changing just how it's built, and it looked really good.
The faces are fucking astounding.
Yeah.
Like, the general presentation is good, the vibe's there, it's got some gritty goodness in it, it's got some of that nice, let's go punch some Nazis vibes to it. But yeah, like, the facial models and the mouth tracking is fucking insane. When I didn't realize that the trailer had come out, I was just scrolling through fucking Twitter and saw, like, a clip of just them talking with their masks off, and I was like, what movie is this? And then I looked, I was like, it's a game? What? Like, what? Just what?
You are special.
Dude!
It does look
good. I want to touch his face! It looks touchable. The outfits look really good.
Yeah.
Like, really good. It doesn't look like Cap's about to go, like, do a hate crime. Avengers. That outfit was so bad.
I like Black Panther's outfit, too. It's all textured, and it's got spirals and stuff on it. It looks good.
Also cape.
Yeah.
And big, big neck.
Yeah.
That's... I don't remember his name. That's T'Challa's grandfather, I believe.
Oh, grandfather.
Pretty sure.
I figured it was going to be his dad.
No, I think it's his grandfather. So I'm wondering what that might mean. Maybe they're just like, let's do another one. Because I think I read... there's a couple of stories with Captain America and Black Panther in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if it's his father or his grandfather. Probably depends on which writer it is, because that's how time works. It's kind of a flat circle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's usually his grandfather, though, but I'm pretty sure that that's one of... I didn't recognize the name, and I was like, that's definitely not his dad. So, cool. I don't know. The two performers look fucking awesome, and I want to squish their faces with my hand. I want to do the blind guy thing. I'm going to be Matt Murdock and just be like, let me touch your face. I'm going to see you with my hands.
Speaking of time being a flat circle, we watched Assassin's Creed from 2016, starring Michael Fassbender and Ozymandias and the Reverend Mother from Dune 2 and Spencer's mom, apparently. I don't remember her name. You do.
Yes. I will keep it close to the chest. You can't have her. She's mine. I like this movie. I don't like that I like it, but it's not that bad. I have a long and troubled history with this movie. This came out when I was neck deep in the Assassin's Creed community. Like hard. So I was all over everything. And there's a lot of lore nitpicking I can do, but most of that I don't really care about anymore. A lot of it I feel like is not necessary retcons, but some of it is decent enough. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, the Animus being a big fucking arm so you can run on fake walls is incredibly stupid, but also it gives you like a... It's a a way to visually present what's going on inside it from looking from the outside. So, like, I get the logic. It just does... It's like, no, the Animus is like walking up to a computer game and plugging your head into... It's not the same at all. But, like, those sorts of things I can nitpick, but I just... Most of them I don't really care about anymore. They're just... I think most of those sorts of changes do work towards the better presentation of it.
My biggest complaint, for sure, is the filters. The visual filters on the movie are just really, really rough and overdone. Like, I tried watching this a couple of years ago, and it was just so ugly that I turned it off. And apparently, I turned it off, like, right before the best part of the movie. But still, a lot of it just looks bad.
Yeah, that's
deep part, fried.
That's part of my biggest complaint, is this was tortured in the editing room. Yes. Like, the color grading is... There's some sequences that I do think are graded pretty well, but the directing and, like, cinematography team from this movie are really talented. They made one of my favorite Macbeth adaptation, which is jaw-droppingly gorgeous and, like, wicked historically accurate and blah, 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 blah. Wicked cool. Great movie. You should watch it. You might be bored. You do have to read the poetry off the screen. But, like, also starring the two leads of this movie. You know, what a coincidence. So, like, there are sequences where you can see either, like, on location shooting or the costuming or whatever, and it's like a lot of the sometimes the color grading does work, but so much of it is just overpowered with, like, and then in the modern day we went on Instagram and we put a blue filter on it, and it's like, well, that looks like shit. Like, mm-hmm. You could I like Zack Snyder movies. Clearly I don't have a problem with weird color grading, but it just looks sloppy and really lazy. And then in general, like, just editing wise it's a fucking mess. The structure is all weird, and then the sequences are all interspliced with each other in a way I don't think it was a smart idea. They tried to speed it up, but that actually makes it slower by intercutting the two different times together, because it just pulls you out of the action and it reduces a lot of the tension. Versus like, if my asshole was clenched to the seat, I don't care how long the movie is, I'm on edge. Like, watching Dune, I don't give a shit, it's almost 3 hours, like, whatever. But this was just like, it's like, I think it's like 210, I think, maybe, and it's like, it feels long, but it's all second act. Like, the third act just kind of, like, plunges right off a cliff right at the end.
Yep.
It's just, it's a shame. I'm gonna make you watch some of the behind the scenes footage, because, like, the fight choreography and stuff is astoundingly well done, and you can see glimpses of it here and there, but they fucking edited it to shit.
You also said, like, they chop the fight sequences up
a lot. I think so. Like, they do a lot of, like, speed... Like, not like the 300-style, like, speed ramping where you do the, like, slingshotting effect of, like, moving time backwards and forwards and whatever. But, like, they definitely, like, randomly sped shit up and then slowed shit down, and it didn't feel conscious or, like, well thought through. Definitely a lot of, like, we removed 4 frames here so it looks faster. And it's like, well, that just makes it fucking unintelligible. Mm-hmm. You know, like... It's disappointing, because a lot of the stunts look really cool, and the cast is pretty talented across the board. A lot of them are definitely here for a paycheck, but, like, I still respect it, you know? I don't know. I think Michael Fassbender is a good idea for a lead. I also like that it's an original character in the modern day and in the past for the game, instead of trying to make an adaptation of any of the games. It's just like, it exists in the world, fuck you. Which means it's contradictory to some of the lore, but... I don't know.
So aren't half the games.
This is true, especially nowadays. Yep. So, like, I like that. I think Fassbender does okay with what he's given. They talked about really trying to make this The Matrix. Like, that was all they were talking about during production, was like, yeah, so we took a lot of inspiration from The Matrix, which is pretty obvious most of the time.
Yep.
But, like, the logic works. You know, it's there. It just... it doesn't feel soulless. That's my one... I think my one big defense is it doesn't feel soulless. It does feel like it got, like, put in a blender.
Yeah. It felt like the people who made it cared, mostly, and then something happened. It definitely has the something went wrong feel to it.
For sure. It's not like this, you know, half the dialogue is kind of rough. It's not like it's some, like, oh, this script was perfect from day one. It's just like, it's fine enough.
A lot of the outfits are really, really, really good.
Oh, my gosh. Not so much, you know. Especially the stuff in the past, I think definitely is more engaging and looks better than the stuff in the modern day.
You were saying too, like, if you were told fix this movie, it's kind of tough to
pinpoint like this led to these billion different bigger problems. So it's like there's some things I could kind of pinpoint, and like Okay, I feel like I definitely need like a general like another couple passes to like tweak the structure and like flesh out the dialogue a little bit more.
Yeah,
stuff like that. But like a lot of the major linchpins, you get it because his last name's Lynch. Hit like. I think work pretty well. I think it actually is a halfway decent understanding of like the philosophical stuff behind it. If anything, I think it actually engages with some adjacent subjects more than the games do. Not because it's smarter than the games, but because it's just going in a different direction. Where it's, I don't know. There's enough like philosophical material in here not to just be like, well, you see, Templar's bad, Assassin's good. You know, like very dumb, boring shit. Like whatever. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's definitely enough in there you could dig into because they're talking about like recidivism and like violent crime. And while that's an incredibly weird topic to like get into, it's an interesting foundation for like at least the idea of why somebody would want to utilize the Apple of Eden to do, like, I don't know. There's something else in there that the games just don't give a shit about. Like they're pretty clearly free will and like determinism and like whatever. And that's all great. And most of them are good and I love them. But like, I don't know. There was an extra like element of something in here that was like, that's kind of cool about like, what does genes make crime happen? Which definitely could not have a racial undertone on it at all if you squint at it. But you know.
Ah, you said squint.
Cause I'm racist.
I like the, we're gonna track the magic rock from history and change the world with the magic rock. I love that all the time. Yeah. It doesn't get old.
It's true. Yeah, I just, it's not the best video game movie, but like, I kind of feel like it's my favorite. Just like, I don't, there isn't much of a time when I wouldn't like want, like I would be like, no, I don't want to watch it. Like, some of it's slow and some of it's kind of boring, but like usually it's at least kind of visually interesting, at least in theory, if not necessarily in execution. And like there's something to look at and shit's going on and it's coherent. It makes fucking sense, if nothing else, which half these movies don't. So like Tomb Raider's better, but not by a lot.
I was going to say hardly, if that's true.
I would say Tomb Raider's better across the board.
I'd say they're pretty even.
It's better than Warcraft, which is weird because at the time I put this in Warcraft neck and neck, but that's because I was stupid in 2016. So I don't know. Like Scorpion's Revenge is definitely better because it's a,
yeah,
you know, yeah, that's, but I don't know. Like this is, yeah, it's like a trifecta between, it's more like it's a quad between first Mortal Kombat, new Mortal Kombat, this and the new Tomb Raider, kind of like all on like the same-ish level. Like there's a soul in here. Definitely not necessarily the most talented people, necessarily, and it probably got fucked with a lot, but like it's not like a complete cash grab.
3 stars is usually how I say or rate a movie that it's like, wow, movie is movie. And I gave it 3 stars, but it's the top of my 3 stars.
Really? Yes. That's better than I was expecting, to be honest. Weird. I thought I was just going to have to sit here and be like, no, it's not dog shit, I swear!
No, it's like you were saying, there's definitely heart and care in here, but it's just buried under a lot of, what the heck went wrong?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the... Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho's. Ooh. Anywho's he wants it.
That means it's my turn.
It is your turn. Damn. So the little girl is less of a little girl now? It's less pedophile-y?
The what?
Never mind. Never mind.
Tiny Tina's Wonderlands is a game based in the Borderlands series. Something not many customers knew. Am I right, Spencer?
Shut up! I'm stupid, okay? I don't even like Borderlands that much. I'm dumb. I knew it was a thing, and then you're like, oh, it's a Borderlands game. And I'm like, what? Am I dumb? Yes, I am dumb.
Yes. It was developed by Gearbox Software and published by 2K Games. It was released for the PlayStation 4, 5, Xbox One, all the series, and PC in March of 2022. I'm going to mention right here at the top of my review that I played on PC and immediately installed the mod called Wonderlands Redux, and I'll do my best to point out why as I go. For the story, This game follows Tiny Tina as she is the dungeon master for a game of dungeons and, I mean, bunkers and badasses. She has three friends, characters I didn't recognize, playing alongside you, the Fate Maker. Butt Stallion is the ruler of the land, and after retrieving the Sword of Souls and fixing up the town, Butt Stallion knights the Fate Maker. But right when that happens, the Dragon Lord shows up, and Butt Stallion is kill. Where were you when Butt Stallion is kill?
I don't know.
I was at home. On the couch. The phone ring. Butt Stallion is kill.
I hate you.
No. The rest of the game is tracking down the Dragon Lord on a quest of revenge. At the end of the game, when the Fate Maker gets the Sword of Souls back, instead of kill Dragon Lord, you revive Butt Stallion and hit the Dragon Lord real hard, but don't kill. He has a pretty cool plot twist, realizes it's just a game of bunkers and badasses meant to have fun, and joins the party. And that's the end of the story.
Wow.
For gameplay, I skipped a lot of stuff in the story. There's side quests and stuff to get even started with. I don't know. Whatever. That's just the basic. Gameplay. I'm skipping over sound design and visuals. My one comment is that the voice acting is really, really good. The actors are great, and I didn't find them annoying at all, which is impressive for a Borderlands game. Really, really nice job.
Maybe you just don't actually like Borderlands.
Everything else, I would say, directly relatable to Borderlands 3. Gameplay is also pretty close to Borderlands 3, with some really cool changes. There's a melee weapon slot. Just like the rest of your gear, numbers go up, and cool buffs. Attack speed and things like if a melee hit is a killing strike, a friggin' frost skull seeks out another enemy or something. Cool rewards for using melee as part of a build instead of a boring, crap, my magazine is empty, attack. Grenades are spells now. Again, can be changed out with different speeds and buffs, and even a charge timer sometimes. You can freaking charge up your grenade to have a bigger blast or something.
Boom.
Yes. There are a couple new weapon types. Some, maybe all, I don't remember, of the pistols are actually crossbows, which means you have to arc your shots. It feels so good getting headshots from a long distance with these. They play exactly like the Mangler from Halo Infinite.
Oh my god!
One of my favorite weapons in the game.
So good.
Your character's build has a special attack with a cooldown timer. There are 5 different subclasses to choose from. I started as a Clawbringer, which meant my special attack was a giant hammer that I slammed into the ground. I chose that over the hammer I threw and could call back, again adding a lot of choice to builds. Each subclass had 2 specials to choose from. Oops, that was out of order. Oh well. It also focused on using a ton of fire damage and buffing the little dragon friend that I had flying around and damaging enemies. The mod that I installed did a lot of work balancing the different subclasses, and it also, quote, added action skill augments. Augments are available at the capstone of each class tree. Basically, it was the cherry on top of the build when you finally hit the end of the skill tree. At a certain point, the game lets you add a secondary subclass, and oh my gosh, I love it when I'm given a secondary subclass option. It's gotta be my favorite gender. It makes rerunning games finally an interesting idea to me because you have so many different ways to play now. I added Stabomancer, which is my secondary, which basically just boosted all my elemental effects and increased melee and critical hits. I could have changed my special attack to something my secondary class added, but I never did. I was comfortable with what I'd been running with up to that point. The mod was really, really important. A lot of people panned this game because it killed itself with 1,000 paper cuts. A lot of small details that added up to a not great experience. The mod added things like a double jump, a dash in midair. Pretty standard things for about Borderlands game so far. It sped up animations in game. Apparently chests opened super slowly, slowing down gameplay. Not stonks. It added a couple endgame rarities and changed the loot drop system in general. This game has loot dice hidden in every level, encouraging you to look in every corner to find these dice. The more you find, the higher your chance of getting better loot as you go through the whole game. I think that's kind of a cool idea, but one, it slows down gameplay, and two, there were a bunch of dice that were mini puzzles of how to even get to. Picture old school Riddler trophies. Riddler trophies are great, but not when they directly affect your loot drop chance in a loot drop based game.
Number go up.
The mod adding Double Jump trivialized a bunch of these dice that were already made useless in the mod, but there was still a counter that showed how many of these loot dice I had found in each level, so I was trying to collect them all, of course. The mod added skill icons in loot. It changed the skill icons in loot. So it was easier to compare your loot and figure out how its stats affected your build. So you could see the pretty picture and then go over to the skill tree and be like, oh, that pretty picture in that skill tree and that pretty picture in that skill tree. Well, I don't have that skill tree, so this loot is useless. Get rid of it. The mod added sprinting in the overworld. So each level is attached to an overworld, kind of like an old school JRPG like Final Fantasy. There are random encounters that are annoying as fuck, and like any old school JRPG. There are loot dice and other things to find and unlock. There are a bunch of side quests to find. Typical overworld stuff. But again, the game, base game, didn't come with running.
That's so weird.
In the overworld.
Like, how does that get through, like, testing?
The mod removed the character model from inventory screen so the menu loads faster, which is wicked cool. There are a bunch of balancing things. Crap ton of balancing things. But what really confuses me is that it adds Borderlands staples back to the game that were missing. Like certain loot item drops unique to bosses. That's been in every Borderlands game ever. And this one, the base game, skipped it. There are a ton of other things that the mod does, but that's really as far as I cared to look. Honestly, I think the base game was plagued by two things. One of them was an actual plague, COVID. there's a real cool thank you from the developers at the end of the credits that says that most of the game was assembled by people that were stuck at home and they somehow networked enough to build this game. Very cool.
To be fair, that's like one third of Halo Infinite.
The other thing that's wrong with this game is the intentional middle finger, like Arkham Origins. I'm confident the developers chose to do little things to slow the game down to make it last longer. For those who don't know, Arkham Origins map is shaped like a horseshoe, and you can't travel from one point to the other. You have to go back and forth along the entire U. I lost my spot. In this game, the little things like chests opening slowly and traversal being slower just makes a fun game a chore. It's okay if this game is smaller than the main entries. Just let me have fun in it. After the main story's over, the Dragon Lord has a roguelike challenge where you play multiple encounters and choose buffs or debuffs that change the difficulty and thus the loot. The harder the run, the better the loot. I played the introductory run that just taught me how to play this roguelike freaking section and never went back. but that's where the mod really shines. It added a ton of endgame loot that wasn't there, especially with the different types of rarities that are in other Borderlands games. I know there were a ton of side quests I didn't chase down and probably some late or endgame bosses that I didn't fight. In closing, the freaking closing thoughts section is almost always the hardest part of my reviews. I had a blast with this game. I have played a lot of Borderlands in my gaming career. It started with Borderlands 2 on the PS Vita, press F to pay respects, followed by a couple more Borderlands 2 playthroughs, a couple attempts at the pre-sequel and 3. Pre-sequel gets so boring though, and the villain's voice acting in 3 annoys the crap out of me, so I haven't finished either of those. But still, I love the series. It's really difficult to suggest getting this game on console. I haven't played it vanilla. I don't know how it is. I would definitely encourage someone to play this modded experience on PC. there's a reason this show is called Dime Gaming Bros, and that's because we're broke and don't have the greatest setups. So this game made my gaming PC really warm. It made my fingertips really hot after, like, the two-hour mark. I want to play more, but I don't want to toast my PC.
Good idea.
It makes me really wish this game was great on console. I would buy it and play through it again, for sure.
You gotta get a homebrewed version. I can't help you with that.
I played for about 20 hours. I got this game as part of my Humble Bundle monthly membership in September of 2023, which means I got this and seven other games for $11 or $12.
Damn, bro.
Yes.
Fuck you. Cheapskate. Piece of shit. I don't like you. Stinky. Stinky.
You thought you were getting a great deal. I got one too.
That's the end of the show. There's nothing else. Next month is Alan Wake 2 and Resident Evil 4 Remake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then actual news. Hopefully, over the collected 2 months, there'll actually be enough to talk about.
One can only hope.
It's true. A big thank you to our patrons over at patreon.com/downcomingrosenetwork. Jeff Lawrence and Caitlin. Hello. Hello. Give us money. I like money. Hello. I like money.
Look at you doing the credits faster and not closing your eyes. A follow-up to last month's joke.
That is true. I forgot about that. That was funny. Yeah, if you want to help support this show as well as our other cool artistic endeavors and autistic endeavors, that's for sure.
Same thing.
Meaning I will single-handedly fund Alan Wake 3 / Control 2, for sure.
Are you planning to go back to Control now that you've played Alan Wake?
Yes, because I own the DLCs, but I did not play them because I knew one of the two was an Alan Wake sort of sequel-ish, and I didn't have the context for that. I am aware of basically everything that happens in it.
I know all of the things.
Yes, and I'm not... It was fine. It was more like, that's cool, but didn't seem to be super well thought out and integrated. It was more like, neat. But why are we still fighting the Hiss? Why aren't we fighting the Taken? That would be more fun. That would be different. You know? But whatever. Lore!
So you're gonna do a whole new run-through of Control?
Maybe.
Not just the DLC?
Probably. I haven't figured that out yet. I need to figure out a good month to do that, because Alan Wake 2, I don't know how... I'm still chugging. It might take a while. And this might be a non-stop experience for the whole month. And then I still want to go back and finish some more of Remake and Original and try to get some more American Nightmare stuff done, just... for shits and giggles. Good thing is you can kind of flip and back and forth between them pretty easily. I finished one of the two on Nightmare Mode, so that was cool, but I didn't 100% on the collectibles, so I don't know. And then I still want to go back to Dead Space stuff, so like, I'm still... kill me. It never ends.
That Dead Space stuff is getting colder.
That Dead Space sissy. But yeah, I'm probably going to go back to it. By like at least the end of the year, at minimum, I'll go back, do Control, and then do the DLCs. And then it'll connect with Alan Wake 2, and my brain will be so big and wet and juicy and no wrinkles. Smooth.
Fuckable.
That too. Yeah, give us money. So I can afford to, as I'm going to talk about next month, buy Alan Wake 2 at full price. Kill me. I can't help myself. I have problems. So yeah, if you want to support the show, get early access to all of our podcasts, as well as stickers, bookmarks, cool art commissions done by Colin. You get your name shouted out like I did. You know, when I leaned in, was just like, hey Jeff, how you doing, buddy? You know, we'll do that with your name. Wow. And stuff. Also, check out our Substack newsletter. It comes to your inbox. Or like I said a couple weeks ago, it comes in my ass at night. Which is a good movie. For all of our podcasts, or most of them anyways.
I was going to say, I don't think you do one for Dime Gaming Bros.
I'm going to get back to that. I think for this month. I did for the first, like, 6 episodes of the season, whenever the fuck we started it, and then I just fell off. Because it's a lot to go through, and it's a pain in the butt. I'm stupid. I write slow. But yeah, we do a Substack newsletter for most of our podcasts. Usually it's Jacob just typing up some pretty words and some nice pictures to follow along.
It's the pictures that sells it.
It is. And it gets sent right to your inbox. And it's free! And it helps us support ourselves and networking and all sorts of stuff. Find all of your family members' emails and then just sign all of them up for our Substack.
Step 1, subscribe to our Substack. Step 2, we circle jerk. Step 3, profit.
True. Also, a thank you to our partners over at Jetpack Comics and Games in downtown Rochester, New Hampshire. I buy video games there sometimes, because sometimes they have video games. They also have arcade games, which are great. And, you know, comics and all that shit. Buy things at niche stores. It's good for the soul and the economy and all the stuff and the strings.
That is the end.
It is the end.
Thank you.
Goodbye.